Now, the United Kingdom's referendum decision to exit the European Union has caused quite a stir in recent days. Let us just think back to the referendum. Were there lies or just huge misunderstanding of the public requirement by the then Prime Minister David Cameron and the government of the time? Did the Brexit vote, of which in the Susie area 52.8% in Tandridge, 50.5% in Reigate and Banstead, and a huge 58.4% in Crawley, voted to leave the EU, become an opportunity by the people to fight back? The vote left government in turmoil as the electorate exercised their democratic right to exit. Resignations, including the Prime Minister. The new Prime Minister, Theresa May, taking on a most difficult task of uniting a split government and a split UK, as there was mention of lies, misleading figures, sums of money quoted, and there was where was this going to end? Jump forward to the last few weeks. The turmoil seems to be continuing. A deal was announced. MPs did not like it. Ministers resigned again in protest, and Tory MPs accused the Prime Minister of betrayal and surrender, and a vote of no confidence was muted. The Irish border needed more thought. What about Gibraltar and Spain? But is the government still not listening to the people? Was this vote actually all about sovereignty, controlling our own borders and laws, and fending off a political invasion of our precious country? Not about trade and security, or even, dare I say it, leaving the EU? Joining me in the studio now to help unravel the mess that ensued and put into perspective what has happened and what we can do to positively take a fresh start in the rejuvenation in the UK standing in the world post-Brexit is the MP for Crawley, Henry Smith. Good afternoon, Henry.
Good afternoon. That's quite a welcome.
It is. There's a lot to discuss in a very short period of time. Now, it's a big subject. We have been confused completely, and I think everybody's lost their interpretation of what Brexit was all about.
It is a huge subject, and I think in terms of your introduction and the question, what is Brexit about, it was all of the above. As you mentioned, people had many different motivations for voting to leave the EU. Some it was about immigration, others it was about sovereignty and who ultimately makes laws, the UK Parliament or the EU. For others, it was about the money, the significant net contribution that we make to the EU. For others, I think it was a vote against the establishment. I think we've seen votes in democracies against the establishment, probably responsible for Donald Trump being elected president. Certainly we're seeing it in places like Italy and Poland and Hungary as well. Even in France, President Macron was elected on a sort of anti-political establishment wave. So I think there are all sorts of motivations, but what is a fact is that we had a referendum almost 2.5 years ago. The debate was very well trailed on both the Remain and the Leave side, and the people made a decision, as you said, in the Susie Radio area, a majority to leave, 58% majority to leave in Crawley, and of course across the UK as well. So it is important that if we are a democracy of nothing else, and it's important that we follow through on that verdict of the British people.
Now, what could we do post Brexit? I mean, you put a tweet out this week, and if I may read it, the problem with those in Downing Street is they never fully understood why UK voters chose to leave the EU. Brexit has been seen as a problem to be mitigated, not an opportunity to rejuvenate our democracy and global links. There is nothing progressive in limited horizons.
Well, for me, I mean, I supported leaving the European Union, and I think Brexit should be seen as an opportunity. This country has unique global links with the Commonwealth, our close relationship with the United States. The world is getting smaller. You know, you can FaceTime anybody anywhere instantly. You can be the other side of the world in a plane within 24 hours. And we're far more used to global trade rather than just local trade. I think the European Community, as it was then called, now the EU, in a sense, developed in the 50s and the 60s and 70s. It was at a time of the Cold War. It was when Western Europe was trying to recover from the Second World War. And it might have been the answer then. But I think in a globalized world and a globalized country like the UK, we shouldn't be limiting our horizons. I think there are those opportunities. I think we should be seizing those.
If I may just quote a question that's come in here from June from Broadfield. What would you personally like to see happen with Brexit?
Well, I think the vote has to be honoured, and it is now the law of the land that we will be leaving the EU on the 29th of March. The question is then, what is our future relationship with the EU? Some people want what they call a so-called soft Brexit, which means that we essentially leave the EU in name only, but we still are very much part of the customs union and the rules of the EU. I don't think that's really what people were voting for. Others want a more clean Brexit, where we don't have an agreement and we trade on World Trade Organization rules. That's perfectly possible. That's how we trade with most of the rest of the world, in fact, the majority of our trade. I think what would be the ideal situation would be to reach an agreement. There's one called Canada Plus, which is very similar to the agreement the EU recently came to with Canada. I think that would work very well. Indeed, the EU were quite keen on offering us that. I'm not supportive of the Prime Minister's deal that she's got before us, because it means we are potentially locked in the customs union until Brussels say we can leave, so we couldn't unilaterally leave. I don't think that's taking back control. I think that's ceding more sovereignty. So we will see what happens, but I think the chance of a so-called no-deal Brexit has increased, but I've given up predicting things in the future, because I think in the last 3 years, many people's predictions have been wildly inaccurate.
I mean, if we look locally for a moment, Henry, the area of just sort of asking us simple questions: what's going to happen, what we're going to do afterwards, how are we going to rebuild our structure and present ourselves forward. Pete from Gatwick, can you tell me one advantage that Brexit will bring to the ordinary person like me, please?
Well, I think by doing those global free trade deals, the Australians, the New Zealanders very keen to do one, the US as well, will mean that we can grow our economy. It won't be constrained by limited horizons of the EU customs union. So I think it will further grow our economy, and our economy is already growing, despite warnings that immediately after the vote there would be a recession. We now have record high employment in Crawley and the Susie Radio area, the economy is growing here in the last quarter, whereas in Germany it's contracting. So I think by having those global horizons, global free trade, I think we can be more prosperous, which means, you know, better wages and more employment in the area. Also, I think, you know, we are paying vast sums of money every year to the European Union, and I know it's a controversial issue with, you know, £350 million for the NHS, but we will be able to deploy that money for our domestic priorities on public services and maybe even tax cuts as well, which I think is an advantage to people on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, on March the 30th, will we wake up and will the world look different? It won't look terribly different. I think this is a slow demerger of the UK from the EU, and I suspect this will change the EU as well. There are many people in many countries across the EU who are unhappy with the way it operates. I mentioned the Italians, the Polish a little earlier on. Lots of issues with the EU. It's not just the Brits.
So really, is this just us as the British looking at expanding our horizons? We've been sort of channeled, if you like, into distilling through Europe, and now we can expand and progress and just look beyond Europe, as it were, to do trade.
Yes, I think so. I mean, that's what I think is the opportunity. So, for example, you know, the reason we have VAT is because that is a Europe-wide sales tax system. We are locked into certain VAT rates. There is a little bit of room for manoeuvre for each member country, but not much. We could rethink our sales tax system. That's certainly something I'd like to look at as well. So there are all sorts of freedoms that become available, and, as I say, possibilities to do free trade deals around the world that I think would benefit certainly an area like the Susie Radio area, which obviously has Gatwick Airport at its heart. We have a lot of multinational companies that are located here, some of them European, others from around the world. So I think those are lots of opportunities that particularly this area can seize.
It's a big deal, isn't it? We're seeing Gatwick, and they're trying frantically to expand and increase trade. I'm not sure if we absolutely need it or not, What do you feel about that?
Well, Gatwick, of course, is another controversial issue.
Yeah.
Some people want to see an additional runway at Gatwick. Other people are concerned about the environmental and infrastructure pressure of Gatwick growing. My position's always been I want to see Gatwick grow its business. I think that's good for our local economy. But I'm not in favour of expanding the boundaries of the airport for an extra runway. I think that would create environmental damage. So I think there's a balance the way we can have growth at Gatwick, which is key for the local economy, without ruining the environment as well. I think that is possible.
If I can take a question from Steve from Crawley, it's just flashed up here. I love to travel, he says. I really don't like my freedom of movement being removed if we exit with Mrs. May's deal. The thought of having to have visas for all but the shortest trips fills me with anger at having my rights removed.
Well, it's already been agreed that there won't be a visa system between the UK and the European Union. You know, many people travel beyond the European Union without visas as well. I recently, with my work, had to be in Indonesia. I could go there without a visa. When I travel to the US, as many people do, there's a very simple form you fill in the plane. You don't need a visa ahead of time, and people won't need visas for going to Europe. There are European countries like Switzerland, like Norway, for example, that aren't in the EU, but you can still travel to without a visa. So I don't think we're going to be at a situation where you might be at Calais or you might be at Schiphol or Rome airport and have to present your passport and get a stamp in it. I think, you know, in an age of electronic identity, a passport swipe, as we do now, will be how it will be in the future.
Now, we've seen a deal being put on the table, Henry, and it's a huge document. There's a lot of things to be discussed in that and debated on it, I'm absolutely sure, and worked out. It's developing over the weekend with extra meetings being put in process in the EU. How do you think Mrs. May's deal will go through? If not, what will happen?
I think Mrs. May's deal will get the approval of the other 27 EU countries, although there's a lot of disquiet about it, particularly in France and Germany. Whether it will get through the House of Commons, I think, is a much bigger question, because you've got both Brexiteers and Remainers who are unhappy with it. You've got large swathes of the Conservative Party who are unhappy with it, including myself. You've got the Labour opposition who are against it, Liberal Democrats, Greens, the DUP are against it as well. So I personally don't think that the Prime Minister has the arithmetic in the House of Commons to get her deal through. And then, of course, the question is what happens then.
It is a big deal to all of us living in the UK. We really don't know what's going to happen, and it does worry some people whether we have a deal or a no deal.
Yes, of course. I mean, this, you know, people don't like uncertainty, and I understand that, and people tend to be averse to change, and that's something that has to be handled. But like I said, on the morning of the 30th of March, I don't think people are going to see really any difference to their lives. And, you know, even if we leave on the 29th of March, as is now law, without a deal with the European Union, then, you know, we do trade with most of the rest of the world on World Trade Organization rules without any difficulties at all. And don't forget that the EU 27, the remaining countries, actually have a trade surplus with the UK. They sell more to us than we do to them. And the thought that the Germans won't want to be selling their BMWs and Audis, or the French their wine, or the Spain won't welcome British holidaymakers spending money there in the summer, the thought that Europe would self-harm, I think, is remote.
It is a very remote proposition. Henry, back to grassroots level, back to us here in the community, Crawley, for instance, how would you see taking Crawley forward to build their experience after Brexit and sort of construct trade to build the economy?
Well, Crawley is a very resilient place. Even when there have been economic downturns, such as 10 years ago and previously, Crawley has come through that reasonably well. That's because a number of factors. It's got a highly skilled workforce, very motivated. We've got an excellent location, of course, with Gatwick Airport, the M23, London to Brighton rail line, proximity to London itself, the capital. And, you know, it's a very pleasant place to live. both in Crawley and the surrounding countryside. I think Crawley will continue to do well into the future, regardless of our future relationship with the EU.
I think it's a case of everybody's got to work together, strive, work hard, promote ourselves well, and rebuild the structure of our standing within the world's economy.
I mean, Britain is very well regarded around the world. When I'm abroad with my work, I'm very much struck at just how Britain is respected and admired, not just because of our history, but because of our presence. People often talk about soft power, and British cultural influence around the world is huge. And of course, it helps that effectively the world language is English as well. So we do have a natural advantage, and I think we need to play to those strengths. And I think places like Crawley and Reigate and Redhill and the Susie Radio area are very well placed to take advantage of that.
Brilliant. Henry Smith, I really appreciate you coming in today and helping to unravel some of the misconceptions around Brexit, and hopefully we've helped somebody today just understand a little bit about what's going on and due process that is taking place.
My pleasure. Good to
Thank you
here.
Very much for joining us.